Good morning, everybody. Hope you're all well. Obviously, Purim is coming up, a great, great Yom Tov, a great time of Yeshua. And I want to mention a few things, really. I have two unrelated topics, both of which are connected to Purim. The first is Tainus Esther, which we are going to commemorate. We're going to observe Yom Yirtzeh Hashem on the Thursday. And it's very interesting that Tainus Esther is not a Tainus that is mentioned in the Gemara at all. Meaning, as far as the Gemara is concerned, Tainus Esther, there was no such thing as Tainus Esther. It really dates from the time of the Ga'anim. And there is a machlokes within the Ga'anim and within the Rishainim why there is such a thing as Tainus Esther. Most people think, and most people are taught, that Tainus Esther is a zecher to the three-day fast that Klal Yisrael had in order to avert the Gezeirah of Haman. And of course, there are two distinctions, of course. Remember that the actual fast of Esther that's recorded in the Megillah was not in the month of Adar at all. It was 11 months earlier. It was in the month of Nisan, meaning actually more things about Purim happened in Nisan than happened in Adar. Nisan is when we had a three-day fast, the 13th, the 14th, the 15th. So the first day of Pesach, we fasted that that year. Nisan is when Haman was killed. In fact, some have a minhag on the second day of Pesach to have a hamintashen, because that's the Pesach, the hamintashen, obviously. I've never tasted what that would taste like, but that's to commemorate Haman's death, and they sing Shoshanas Yaakov. So the fast of Esther was, number one, 3 days, and number two was in the month of Nisan to be able to avert the Gezeirah that was coming up in Adar in 11 months. We do not want to fast during Nisan because Nisan is a happy month, nor do we want to have 3 days. That would have been too hard. So the Gaonim reason that the Tainus Esther in Adar is a zecher to the three-day fast of Esther. That is the standard interpretation. That is the most common interpretation. But there is another interpretation based on the Yerushalmi that Tainus Esther has nothing to do with Esther's fast. It actually was a minhag that the day that Jews went out to war, they would fast. Now that's pretty amazing. You'd figure when you're going out to combat, you want to be at high energy. You want to have a good breakfast, so to speak, to be ready to fight the enemy. And yet the Jewish people realized that their nitzachon would not depend on military prowess. Their nitzachon would depend on spiritual tshuva and masim tovim. And thus they regarded the fast on the 13th as the necessary precursor for siyata dishmaya in their war. Seen in this way, therefore, it is not a zecher to the three-day fast of Esther, but it is an unrecorded tainus on the Yom of Milchama. Now, of course, that makes the date very perfect. That's why it's Yud Gimel Adar, because that's exactly the date that there was the tainus. That was the day of the war. That was the day of the struggle. That was the day that we were able to defeat and destroy our enemies. And of course, it's been pointed out many, many times that the Jewish people do not make a holiday on the day of defeating our enemies in war. That would have been Yud Gimel. We make our holiday on the day of peace from war because we never glorify war. War is a necessary evil sometimes, but it's not something that we celebrate and it's not something that we glorify. Now, there is a very, very interesting problem with Tainus Esther, though. It's an interesting halakhic problem, and that is the earliest document of Torah Shebaal Peh, which is even earlier than the Mishnah. It's 100 years earlier than the Mishnah, is a very brief document called Megillat Tanit. Now, Megillat Tanit literally means a scroll of fasting, but really it's the opposite. The name is a little misleading. It is a list of various chagim which commemorate events during the second Beis HaMikdash, which were considered to be so significant, miraculous, Yeshua for Klal Yisrael, that the Chachamim enacted that you're not allowed to fast on those days if you want to have a private fast, nor are you allowed to eulogize. Well, some of them you don't even eulogize, others you eulogize. Now, Megillat Tanit does not incorporate the Yom Tovs that are Torah Yom Tovs. It doesn't say, for example, can't fast during Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. The Doraisas are the Doraisas. But Megillat Tanit includes a whole bunch of days of commemoration. It includes, for example, Purim and Hanukkah. But it includes a lot more days as well in which you're not allowed to fast. And one of the days in Megillat Tanit that you're not allowed to fast is the 13th of Adar. You're not allowed to fast. The 14th and the 15th of Adar, you're not allowed to fast because that is Purim. And even Shushan Purim, even for the people who don't observe Purim on the 15th, they are not allowed to fast on the 15th. But it's interesting that Megillat Tanit says, not only are you not allowed to fast on the 14th and the 15th, you're not allowed to fast on the 13th. And the reason is nothing to do with Purim. The Simcha of the 13th of Adar is because it is called Yom Nicanor. It is the day of Nicanor. Now, who is Nicanor? Nicanor, this goes back to Hanukkah, which of course is after the Purim story. Nicanor was one of Antiochus's generals. And at some point in the Hasmonean Wars, this is actually after the Hanukkah miracle, Nicanor gathered a big force to attempt to conquer, subdue Yerushalayim. And there was a great miracle in which Nicanor was defeated. So to commemorate that great miracle, a holiday was enacted. Again, it's not the full holiday, obviously. And that holiday was called Nicanor's Day. And it is recorded in Megillat Tanit that on the day of Nicanor, you are not allowed to fast or eulogize. So the question becomes, if the day of Nicanor is a chag in which you're not allowed to fast or even eulogize a mace, then how could we later make a takana called Tainis Esther that is contradicting the earlier enactment? And I want to emphasize it is earlier because Megillat Tanit is before the Mishnah and Tanit Esther is from the time of the Gaonim after the Gemara. How could the Gaonim make a practice that contradicts the Kviat Chag of Megillat Tanit? And the short answer is that there is in reality a machlokas in the Gemara about the continuing validity of the Megillat Tanit holidays. According to one opinion, Bakla Megillas Tainis. In other words, Megillas Tainis was a listing of holidays that were only observed when there was a Beis HaMikdash. And when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, those holidays ceased to be observed. Megillas Tanis became nullified with the Chorban. That is opinion number one. There is opinion number two that says Megillas Tanis remains in effect, even Bizman Hazeh. Lahalacha, it's a Dabar Pashat, that we paskin butla Megillas Tanis. That's why, you know, you don't hear anybody observing all of these days. In fact, if you looked at Megillas Tanis, you would actually see 30 extra days in the course of the year that are supposed to be observed as holidays. Most of them, unless you've learned Megillas Tanis, you've never heard of. And the reason is because we paskin that after the Chorban, butla Megillas Tanis. So Memela, if after the Chorban, butla Megillas Tanis, that would actually mean that Tainis Esther can now replace Yom Nicanor. Now, Eina Chinami, keep in mind that the second Beis HaMikdash was constructed relatively quickly after the Purim story. And had there been a Tainis Esther then, it would have been superseded by Yom Nicanor when there is a Beis HaMikdash. But historically, that's not an accurate statement because there was no Tainis Esther during the Bayit Sheni anyway, because it comes from the Gaonim, but Eino Chinami, the whole halachic predicate of Tainis Esther is based on the opinion called Batla Megillat Tanit. And that's how we paskin, which is interesting because that would mean that according to the other view that we don't paskin like, but there is that other view, according to the other view that Megillat Tanit was not batel, Tainis Esther would literally not be observed. Tainis Esther would not be observed because it would be replaced by Yom Niknar. Now, I was thinking of the following thought. I didn't see any commentator say it, but I think it's a possibility. You know, there is a tractate. There is a tractate which is called Maseches Ketanos. It's not one of the main Masechtos of Shas, but it's a later compendium. And this is called Maseches Sofrim. Maseches Sofrim. And Maseches Sofrim, again, it dates from the time of the Gaonim, although it incorporates many, many Ma'amarim from the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. So it's Bavli, Yerushalmi, but Gaonim added various things to it. And Maseches Sofrim is a difficult tractate, but it has great historical value because it records minhagim of Eretz Yisrael that are virtually extinct today, meaning there are certain minhagim which predate the Babylonian Talmud, which were prevalent in the land of Israel, that later simply got extinct. And the only way we know about them is through Megillat Tanit. And in Maseches Sofrim, it is recorded that the minhag of Tainis Esther was observed as a three-day fast after Purim, Monday, Thursday, Monday. A very unusual custom that, you know, nobody practices in the world at all. The Monday, Thursday, Monday after Purim was observed as a fast in commemoration of the three-day fast of Esther Hamalka. So first of all, you see in Megillas Tanis, you see in Maseches Sofrim that the fast of Esther is correlated to Esther's three-day fast as opposed to the undesignated fast of the 13th. But it's interesting that Maseches Sofrim actually positions Tainis Esther after Purim rather than before Purim. And why would that be so? So the thought that I have is that perhaps Maseches Sofrim is reflecting the opinion that Megillas Tainis was not nullified. And if Megillas Tainis was not nullified, it would be impossible to have Tainis Esther before Purim, because that would collide with the holiday of Yom Nikanor that still had to be observed based on Megillas Tainis. So as a result, Tainis Esther had to be pushed off after Purim, and then we made it 3 days, not three consecutive days, but 3 days, Monday, Thursday, Monday. So Maseches Sofrim is giving you a way to observe Tainis Esther, even if you're observing Yom Nikanor, because Loi Batla, Megillas Tainis, but La Halacha, we don't follow this. La Halacha, we basically say Batla Megillas Tainis, and because it's Batla Megillas Tainis, Yom Nikanor is no longer observed, and therefore Tainis Esther can be observed right before Purim. Let me just hasten to add that because it is a post-Talmudic fast, it is not in the Gemara even, it's only from the time of the Gaonim, it is by far the most lenient of all of the fast days. And if anyone has any particular health problem, even if it's not very serious, but there's nausea or extreme exhaustion, very strong exhaustion, there is a great, great makom to be mekel. One should talk to a rav if there's any difficulty in fasting. And absolutely, I still get the question about pregnant women. A pregnant woman should absolutely, or a nursing mother should absolutely not fast. And even a mother with young children who needs to be at her high energy level also does not have to fast the fast of Esther. Interesting question. The minhag is that we do not break the fast of Esther until after the reading of the Megillah, which means even after it's dark, you don't eat or drink until after the Megillah reading. Let me point out that that too is essentially a chumrah that is not an absolute rule. If somebody is weak, whether it's a man or a woman, Then as soon as the fast is over, even before they daven Ma'ariv, if they're davening Ma'ariv late enough, they can eat or drink. The only halacha that needs to be observed is you should not have a meal with bread. You don't have hamotzi, or you don't eat a significant amount of mizonos. But if you want to have juice, water, coffee, fish, meat, potatoes, you know, some type of food just to keep you going, then that is permitted if it's difficult. I mean, the minhag is, if it doesn't bother you so much, to wait until after Megillah. Obviously, that doesn't work in Yerushalayim. Normally, Yerushalayim, we don't read the Megillah till the next day. But this year, everybody's going to be reading Megillah Thursday night. So lechatchila, we wait. But if there's difficulty, one does not have to go crazy. Now, this is especially important for women at home who may not be hearing Megillah until later in the night, either from their husband or from somebody else and the like. They absolutely do not have to wait until the later Megillah reading, and they should not be machmer on themselves. Let me also point out, although it's not really controversial, that you cannot be yaitzei. I mean, everything's a machlokas lemaisa, but the bottom line lahalacha is you cannot be yotzei mikra Megillah through Zoom. You cannot be yaitzei. Now, what that would mean is the following. That would mean that if you're not able to get out, I mean, I don't know if this is such a great solution, but if you can do it this way, do it this way. If you're not able to get out and nobody can come to you to read Megillah, so what you should try to do, and you still have a few days to arrange it, is you should try to get yourself a kosher Megillah. And even if you don't know how to read or know how to lay, you can have a Baal Koreh who is reading it over Zoom. And you should repeat after the Baal Koreh, Mila Bamila. So the Baal Koreh is guiding you, but he's not being motzi you, because you are being motzi yourself by your reading. So that you can do through Zoom. I can't have somebody be motzi me through Zoom, but I can have somebody guide me in reading the Megillah through Zoom. But that would require, that's a little bit of a hardship, that would require, if you're going to do it that way, that you have a kosher Megillah in front of you. Masha Enkein, if somebody's being motzi you, like in Shul, you don't need a kosher Megillah, because the guy that's reading from the Megillah is going to be motzi you. So that's something to be aware of. It might be a particular difficulty. Again, if a person could only make one Megillah reading, the Megillah of the day has a greater status than the Megillah of the night. So if you had to make a choice, you would go with the day Megillah over the night Megillah. But again, I hope very much that everybody will be able to be yotzei the very important mitzvah of Megillah without, of course, in any way compromising their health. If l'maisa, nothing works, you can't get out, and you don't have a kosher Megillah, then I would still say, listen to it via Zoom, because even though you're not yotzei and you can't make a bracha, at least you have some type of participation in Pirsume Nisa, in publicizing God's miracle. So it is not devoid of spiritual merit. I can't lie to you. It is technically not being yotzei, the obligation of Megillah, but it is a worthwhile endeavor anyway. That way you're participating in remembering the miracles and the Yeshua of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, it's interesting that the Gemara in Megillah tells us, and this is the halacha, that women are also chayavos in Mikra Megillah, just as men are chayavos in Mikra Megillah. And this is a little bit of a chiddush, because reading the Megillah is, of course, a mitzvah asei, shazman grama, and a mitzvah asei, a time-bound mitzvah, a time-bound positive mitzvah, women are normally exempt. But the chiddush is that Megillah is one of the exceptions because of the statement, af hein hoyu bioso hanes, they too were in the miracle. And that overrides what would otherwise be the exemption of mitzvah saseh shazman gerama. Now, what do those words mean, af hein hoyu Bioso Hanes, they too were in the miracle. There is a machlokes, Rashi, and Tosvos, what those words mean. According to Rashi, afhein hayu bioso anes means women were the eker protagonists. They were the main protagonists in the miracle, namely Esther. Esther was so instrumental in the Yeshua. So it doesn't just mean women too benefited from the miracle, but it means they were the Iker Hanes. That's how Rashi understands it. Tosvos says, it makes no difference if a woman is the Iker Hanes or not the Iker Hanes. Afein Hayu just means that they too were the beneficiaries of the Nes, because the Gezerah of Haman, Lahashmid, Ulaharog, as Kol HaYehudim, applied to men and women. So quite logically, women should share in the obligation. Now, this machlokas Rashi and Tosas appears in two other places. There's a total of three places where the Gemara uses af hein hayu bioso hanes to override what would otherwise be the exemption of mitzvat asei shazman gerama. The first, well, I'm not going in any particular order, but the first one is the one I mentioned, the reading of Megillah. The second is Ner Chanukah. Women are obligated to light Chanukah candles if they don't have their husband or whatever. Why? Because they too were in the miracle of Chanukah. Again, we have a machlokas, Rashi and Tosos, the same machlokas. According to Rashi, it means that women were instrumental in part of the Chanukah story. And here Rashi refers us to the story of Yehudis and Holofernes. Holofernes, you'll remember, was a general of Antiochus. And Yehudis, this is very reminiscent of the story of Yael and Sisera. In fact, scholars basically consider this a made-up story that's based on the Tanakh story. But Rashi takes it as a real historical event. Rashi says, women are be'ikar hanes because of stories like Yehudis and Holofernes. And on the Mesiras Nefesh side, Chana and her seven sons. That's how Rashi learns. Tosvos, once again, learns, afhein hayu bioso anes, just means that women too were being persecuted by the Yehudim, and therefore they too benefited from the miracle. The same machlokas about how do you interpret afhein hayu bioso anes that you had by Megillah, is it Iker Hanes or beneficiary of the Nes, you also have with respect to Chanukah. Now, the third case where the Gemara says, afhein hayu bioso anes, is Dalid Kosos. Women at the Seder are chayavos in the mitzvah of Dalid Kosos, even though it's afhein hayu bioso anes, I'm sorry, even though it's a mitzvah sasei jezman grama, because of afhein hayu bioso anes. And once again, for the third time, we have the identical machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says that nashim, women, are responsible for the main miracle of Mitzrayim, as Chazal say, bischus nashim sitkanios nigalu. It was in the merit of the righteous women that had emuna that there was a geula. Tosfos learns it doesn't mean women have to be the Ikaranes. It simply means that women as well as men were enslaved and women as well as men were redeemed. Therefore, it is proper that they participate in celebrating the Geula. So the Machlokas, Rashi, and Tosfos is consistent in all three of those cases. But however you interpret the words, afhein hayu bioso anes, the one thing that you see is it overrides the principle of mitzvat asei shazman gerama. Okay, everyone understands this. Meaning we start off with a principle that says positive mitzvos that are time-bound, women are normally exempt from. That's why a woman is exempt from shofar, even though the custom is to hear it. A woman is exempt from lulav. A woman is exempt from sukkah, even though many have the minhag of doing it. So women are exempt from Zman Grama, but then we have exceptions. And one of the overrides, one of the principles that override the exemption of mitzvah saseh shezman grama is af hein hayu bioso hanes, whether it's Rashi's interpretation or Tosfos' interpretation. So now, let me mention something that Tosfos says in Maseches Megillah in the name of the Baal Hilchais Gedolos, often abbreviated the Bahag, right? You've heard the Bahag, that's Baal, the author of a sefer that is called Hilchos Gedolos. And the Bahag was actually one of the early Gaonim, and his sefer, which is a kind of a halachic compendium, is actually one of the very first books that was written after the Babylonian Talmud itself. It's one of the very, very first. I think the She'iltos of Rav Achai Gaon is the actual first, and the Bahag is afterwards. The actual author is anonymous. We're not sure which Gaon wrote the Bahag. Some say it was Rav Yehudai Gaon. Others say it was Rav Shimon Kayara. And others say we don't even know who the author is. But it's a very important sefer. And although, you know, you can't paskin directly from the Bahag, but it is a source for much, much later authorities. And Tosfos brings, in the name of the Bahag, a very interesting halacha, that although women are chayavos in Mikra Megillah, a woman cannot read Megillah for a man. A woman is chayavos, but she cannot read Megillah to be mitzi a man. Now, the Bahag is not talking about things like reading in a minyan where you have a problem of kol isha. The Bahag seems to be saying that even if a wife is reading for her husband in the privacy of their home, and a husband is allowed to listen to his wife's singing voice, right? A wife can sing to her husband. So machlokas if she's a nida. Some are makel, even when she's a nida, she could sing in front of her husband. Other people are machmer on that. Talk to your local Orthodox rabbi if you have any question. But certainly if she's not a nida, there is absolutely no iser for a married woman to sing in front of her husband and children, even if she's a soloist. So the Bahag's problem is not kol isha. The Bahag categorically simply says a woman cannot be motzi a man in Mikra Megillah. Now the problem is that seems inconsistent with the basic rules of halacha. In fact, we actually spoke about this topic generally at great length, maybe a month or 5 or 6 weeks ago. And that is the general rule in halacha is, if you are chayav in a mitzvah, you could be mitzi somebody in that mitzvah. If you're not chayav in the mitzvah, you can't. So a katan, a child below bar mitzvah, can certainly not read Megillah for anybody because the katan is not chayav. A goy, a little absurd, but it's possible. A goy who knows Hebrew very well cannot be mitzi me in Kiddush or Havdalah or Megillah reading. Because yes, the goy might read Hebrew and the goy might have perfect singing voice, but he's not mechuyav, right? This is a very important klal. Kol she'eino mechuyav v'davar. If you're not chayav in the mitzvah, you cannot do the mitzvah for somebody else. But the implication is that if you are chayav in the mitzvah, you can do it for other people. So a woman cannot blow shofar for a man. That's a davar pashut, because a woman is not chayavis in shofar. It's a mitzvah taseh shezman grama that's not does not have an exception. So even if a woman, her minog is to hear shofar, she certainly cannot be motzi a man. She could blow for other women. But when it comes to Megillah, since men and women have an equal obligation, because of afein hayu bioso anes, the woman is mechuyavais. If the women are mechuyavais, why can they not be mitzi men? Right? A woman could make kiddush for a man. right? Because she's chayavis and kiddush, she could be might see a man. Why can she not read Megillah for a man? So I want to give you two possible answers to the Bahag. And one answer might be, which I really just thought of like yesterday, that maybe the Bahag is consistent with another difficult ruling that the Bahag has. And that is, when the Rambam compiled his Sefer HaMitzvos, right? The Rambam compiled a listing and a brief explanation of the 613 mitzvos. Before the Rambam enumerates the 248 positives and the 365 negatives, the Rambam is makdim 14 principles in how you count mitzvahs. It's very interesting. He devoted a lot of time and effort to kind of explaining how you count mitzvahs. Now, why is that a difficult problem? Because if you look at every commandment of Hashem in the Torah, you get a lot more than 613. You get like 5,000. Hashem said, do this, do this, do this. Right? So the Rambam had to have criteria. When do you aggregate? When do you bunch them together? When do you separate? When do you look at many sequential steps, like a korban? A korban may have 20 steps. A sin offering, there may be 20, 30 things you have to do. Shecht it, sprinkle it, etc. We don't count them as separate mitzvahs. We have one mitzvah called bringing a sin offering. Right? So the Rambam tried to give a scientific classification for how you aggregate or disaggregate various commandments in order to come up with the number of taryag. But the very first principle that he says is an obvious principle, and that is principle number one when you count the 613 mitzvot is you don't count mitzvot that are only of rabbinic origin. Every student of halacha knows that there are mitzvot that are called da'oraisa, mitzvot that the Torah obligates you to do, Kriya Shema, Tefillin, Shabbos, Kashrus. And then we have mitzvos that are only of rabbinic origin, such as lighting Hanukkah candles and reading Megillah and the like. And the Rambam says that it's obvious that when we are counting the 613 mitzvos, we are only counting da'oraisas. We are not counting Drabbanans. Now, the Rambam says, that seems to be such an obvious principle. Why do we have to state it? Obviously, the 613 mitzvahs are those that God gave Moshe at Sinai. That doesn't include Drabbanans. But the Rambam says, the reason I have to mention this obvious principle is because there were some predecessors who seem to have ignored this principle. And the person that he mentions very specifically is the Baal Hilchos Gedolos, who made his own enumeration of mitzvot, 613. And in the Bahag's list of 613, he counts Mikra Megillah. The Bahag counts reading Megillah to be a Torah commandment. And the Rambam says, how could that possibly be the case? That there's a Torah commandment to read Megillah Esther? That makes no sense. The whole story of Esther is way after the Torah. And obviously, the chiyuv to read the Megillah came much later. And it's Drabbanan, even though it's biblical, even though it's from the Tanakh. But if it's after the five books of Chumash, it is Drabbanan. Even things that are recorded in Tanakh or Nach, Nevi'im and Kesuvim, are Drabbanan. So because of this, the Rambam says we don't count Drabbanans like Mikra Megillah. But what is the Bahag's logic? What is the Bahag doing? How is the Bahag counting Mikra Megillah? So one of the answers that's given is that the Baal Hilchos Gedolos doesn't mean to say that the reading of the Megillah is a Torah commandment. But the Baal Hilchos Gedolos says there is a Torah commandment to give gratitude to Hashem when you have experienced, when Klal Yisrael has experienced the redemption. Therefore, when we read Megillah, we are fulfilling a Torah commandment of gratitude to Hashem when there is a nes. So in that sense, the Bahag holds that Mikra Megillah is a chiyuv d'oraisa, because it is a way that we are fulfilling that particular mitzvah. So keep that in mind. This is the unusual sheet of the Bahag, that Mikra Megillah is part of the 613 mitzvahs, at least in that indirect way. Now, keep that in mind. Let me now bring you a Taisvas in Psachim. The Gemara in Psachim says that women are chayavos to eat matzah at the Seder, Leil Seder, even though matzah is a mitzvah asei, shazman gram, that's only Leil Seder, because the Torah juxtaposes the prohibition of chametz and the mitzvah of matzah. It says, lo sochal olav chametz, you shall not eat chametz, shivas yomim tochal of matzahs, for 7 days you should eat matzah, meaning the first night is an obligation, the other days it's optional. And since that appears in one pasuk, so we have a drasha that anybody who has the negative of not eating chametz has the positive of eating matzah. And since women clearly have the negative, because women always are obligated in negative commandments, they have the positive. And the drasha overrides mitzvat asei shazman gerama. This is the Gemara in Arve Psachim. Taisvas asks a wonderful kasha. Why does the Gemara need a drasha to obligate women in matzah? Why can't we use the identical reasoning of afhein hayu biyosu anes? The same way I say women are chayavos in Megillah, because afhein hayu biyosu anes, whether you understand it like Rashi or like Tosfos. And the same way that women are obligated in Neros Chanukah, because of afhein hayu biyosu anes, whether it's like Rashi or like Tosfos. And indeed, by Pesach itself, women are chayavos in Dalet Kosos, because of afhein hayu biyosu anes, Mitzrayim, whether like Rashi, bischus nashim tzidkaniyos nigalum, or according to Taisvus, that they were redeemed from slavery. So if afhein hayu biyosu anes is enough of a reason to obligate them in Dalet Kosos, then afhein hayu biyosu anes is enough of a reason to obligate them in matzah. So why does the Gemara have to shift to a new drasha, to a hekesh, to a juxtaposition, to be mechayev of women in matzah? Why can't I use our old friend, afhein hayu biyosu anes? It's a good kasha. So Tosfos answers with a very important yesod. Tosfos answers, afhein hayu biyosu anes is not a strong enough factor to override a biblical exemption. That if a woman is would be biblically exempt because of zman gerama, afhein hayu biyosu anes can only create a rabbinic obligation. It cannot create a Torah obligation. And therefore, you'll note that the three cases where the Gemara says afhein hayu biyosu anes are all rabbinic mitzvahs. Reading Megillah, the pasuk is rabbinic. I'll get back to the bag in a moment. Dalet Kosos is rabbinic. Ner Chanukah is rabbinic. So afhein hayu biyosu anes could be mechayev a woman rabbinically. And ein l'chinami by matzah, afhein hayu biyosu anes might generate a rabbinic obligation on a woman to eat matzah. But afhein hayu biyosu anes is not strong enough to become a doraisa chiyuv to override zman gerama. It cannot override zman gerama on a doraisa level. Therefore, in order for a woman to be chayevet in matzah on a Torah level, I need the juxtaposition of chametz and matzah, because afhein hayu biyosu anes cannot bring her up to a Torah level because I have Zaman Gerama, right? It's like two opposing forces. Zaman Gerama is pushing her out, pushing her down. Afein Hayu B'Yosef Enes is pushing her up, but it can only push her up to a Drabanan level. It cannot push her up to a Doraisa level. And that's why I need the Hekesh. Okay, so that's Tosos. So now, I want to go back to the first din of the Bahag that I mentioned, right? The Bahag is the one that says that even though women are chayavot in Mikra Megillah, but a woman cannot be mitzi a man. And the kasha is, why is that so? If she is chayavas in Mikra Megillah, why can she not be mitzi a man? The Bahag is very difficult. So the answer that I'm thinking of is that maybe the Bahag goes l'shitaso, because the Bahag maintains that the obligation of a man reading Megillah is a Torah obligation. The Bahag counts Mikra Megillah as a Torah obligation, namely giving gratitude to Hashem when there's a miracle. Now, the woman would have an exemption of Zman Gerama, but she has the counter svara of Afein Hayu B'Yosef Enes. But if we go with Tosus's reasoning that Afein Hayu B'Yosef Enes can only generate a rabbinic obligation and not a Torah obligation, it would turn out that according to the Bahag, the man has a chi of Dioraisa to read Megillah, and the woman only has a chi of Drabanan to read Megillah, because Afein Hayu B'Yosef Enes cannot override Zman Gerama on a Doraisa level. So now it's mamish beautiful. Just like if you're not mechuyev at all, like a katan, you cannot be motzi, somebody that's mechuyev. The same logic would say, if you're only mechuyev rabbinically and doraisa you're exempt, you wouldn't be able to be mitzi a person who is chayev biblically. And therefore, the Bahag l'shitaso, that a man reading Megillah is a Torah commandment, is quite consistent in saying that a woman cannot do so. But again, this is presupposing that the Bahag agrees with Tosfos's Yesod, that Afein Hayu B'Yosef Enes only works on a rabbinic level. It does not work on a Torah level. If Afein Hayu B'Yosef Enes would work even on a Torah level, then the woman herself would become Chayav D'Oraisa, and there would be no problem in her being Mitzi, a man. Right. So that is answer number one for how we understand the Bahag. But let me give you an answer number two. And answer number two is, even if we assume, like the halacha, that reading Megillah is drabanan, is totally drabanan for men and for women, and therefore the woman is drabanan, the man is drabanan, there is still a certain logic why a woman cannot read Megillah for a man. And that is the following idea. When the Chachamim enacted that we celebrate Purim by reading Megillah. When I say the Chachamim, I mean all the way back from Mordechai and Esther. But technically that is called Rabbanan. There were two different chiyuvim they put upon us. There are two different reasons why we read Megillah. Reason number one is Pirsumei Nisa. It is a way of publicizing, proclaiming Hashem's rachamim in bringing us a Yeshua and a Geula. And when we read Megillah, we are mekayem the idea of Pirsumei Nisa. Obviously, if you're doing it in a group, in a minyan, you're mefarsem it among other people. But even if you're by yourself, even if it's just to be mefarsem the nes to you, there is a kiyum of Pirsumei Nisa. That is element number one in Megillah reading. But element number two in Megillah reading is that the Chachamim enacted that we also fulfill the mitzvah of remembering the evil of Amalek. Now, we did have Parsha Socher already, that's true. But Mikra Megillah itself, the Rabbanan instructed that you think about the evil of Amalek, because Haman is Agagi, Haman comes from Agag, the king of Amalek. And when we Think about the downfall of Haman. We are remembering the mitzvah of eradicating Amalek. So there are two different sub-mitzvahs that you are fulfilling when you read Megillah. One is Pirsumei Nisa, and the other is Zechiras Amalek. In other words, Mikra Megillah is a mitzvah that has two components that are being fulfilled. Now, are women chayavos in the mitzvah of remembering Amalek? Now, we do know that it is a minhag that women try to hear Parshat Zachor, and we often say women are chayavos, but really it's a huge machlokas. The Sefer HaChinuch says, not the Minchas Chinuch, the Sefer HaChinuch says that women are not chayavos in remembering Amalek. And the reason that he gives is the mitzvah to remember Amalek is tied to the mitzvah of destroying Amalek, right? There are two different mitzvahs, a mitzvah of remembrance and a mitzvah of eradication. Now, the mitzvah of eradication we don't have today because we cannot identify Amalek. So we're not into eradicating, so don't go out and shoot some person you think is Amalek. But we do have the mitzvah of remembering. Now, the Sefer HaChinuch says that the purpose of the mitzvah of remembering is to eventually fulfill the mitzvah of eradication. And since women are not chayavos in eradication of Amalek, why? Because that is an element of war, and women are exempt from war. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, if women are exempt from Mechias Amalek, women are going to be exempt from Zechiras Amalek. Now, not everybody agrees with that correlation. Many Rishonim say, there's a mitzvah of Zechira. That's why women go to Parshas Zohar. There's a mitzvah of Zechira, even if you don't have Mechias. But the Sefer HaChinuch does correlate them. The Sefer HaChinuch says the Chovas Zechira is Mekushar to the Chovas Mechia. And since women are not Chayavais in Mechia, because that's Milchama and Nashim are not Benot Milchama, women are exempt from Zechira. So according to the Sefer HaChinuch, women don't have to hear Parshas Zohar at all. Again, it's a machlokas, but that's what the Sefer HaChinuch would say. So now, the Marcheshes, one of the great Dayanim of Vilna before the war, says the following. So it turns out, when a man reads Megillah, a man is fulfilling two mitzvos at the same time. He's rabbinically, he is fulfilling Pirsumei Nisa, and he is fulfilling the mitzvah of remembering Amalek. He is doing both of those mitzvos in his reading of Megillah. When a woman reads Megillah, she is fulfilling Pirsumei Nisa. And indeed, that's the language. Af hein hayu yoso enes. But according to the Sefer HaChinuch, she is not fulfilling Zechiras Amalek, because she does not have, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, she does not have the mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek, because Zechira is connected to Mechia. So the Marcheshes says quite ingeniously, if we can assume that the Baal Hilchos Gedolos follows the view of the Sefer HaChinuch, which he doesn't say beferish one way or the other, we can now understand why a woman cannot read Megillah for a man. Because the same principle that says, if you're not chayav in a mitzvah, you cannot be motzi another person, would by the same token say, if you're only chayav in one dimension of the mitzvah, you cannot be motzi a person who is chayav in two dimensions of the mitzvah. So the woman, who like the Sefer HaChinuch, who is not chayevet in Zechirat Amalek, cannot read Megillah for the man who is chayav in Zechirat Amalek, because they only share a common denominator of Pirsumei Nisa, but they don't share the common denominator of Zechirat Amalek. And with respect to Zechirat Amalek, she is eina mechuyevet. She is not obligated like the Sefer HaChinuch, and therefore she cannot be Vaitzi the man. And even if you're machmer and you say a woman should go to Parshas Zohar, that simply means we don't know. Since it's a machlokas, if women have a chiyuv, so we have to be machmer, they should go to Parshas Zohar. But we have to be machmer that they can't read Megillah for a man because they don't have the Amalek obligation, meaning maybe they have it, maybe they don't. It may be unresolved, and therefore we have to be machmer on both sides, and that is not an inconsistency. Now, based on this, and this is the final point here, the Marcheshes says a gewaldige chiddush that many women libbers might like a lot. He wants to be mechalek between the Megillah reading of the night and the Megillah reading of the day, right? There's the Thursday night reading this year and the Friday morning reading. I had mentioned before that the Friday morning reading is more important, but now you see an extra dimension for this. The Marcheshes brings a raya that the mitzvah of waging war, even against Amalek, is only a mitzvah of the day and not a mitzvah at night. At night, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want you to wage war. Now, obviously, if you're attacked, you fight even at night. But to aggressively initiate war, even to conquer Eretz Yisrael or to eradicate Amalek, is a daytime activity, not a nighttime activity. So there's no Mechiat Amalek at night. And since the Sefer HaChinuch correlates Zechira with Mechia, we would also say the mitzvah of remembering Amalek is only in the day. So now this is what the Marcheshes wants to say. So it turns out that when I read Megillah in the daytime, I am fulfilling both Pirsumei Nisa and Zechiras Amalek. But the Megillah of the night is only Pirsumei Nisa and not Zechiras Amalek, because the mitzvah of war is only in the day, and Zechira is Mekushar with the mitzvah of war. So it turns out, therefore, that men and women are equal at night, because the only mitzvah they're doing in the reading of the Megillah is Pirsumei Nisa. So says the Marcheshes, a wonderful chiddush. That which the Baal Hilchos Gedolah says, that a woman cannot be mitzi a man in reading Megillah, is only the Megillah of the day. But in the Megillah of the night, a woman and a man are exactly equal, and a woman would be able to read Megillah for a man. Your only problem would be that for her to do it in shul, for her to do it for other men, there's a problem with kolisha, different issues there. But in the simple case where a woman is simply doing it for her husband or whatever, the Marcheshes says that the chumrah of the Baal Hilchos Gedolah would only apply to the Megillah of the day. It would not apply to the Megillah of the night. And therefore, at night, a woman could read for a man. Now, if a woman has to read for a man and it's in the day, so once again, the solution would be that if she knows how to read the Megillah and he doesn't, then he should repeat after her word for word if he's able to. And that way, of course, even if the woman is doing it, he's the one that's actually reading for himself. And that would be the solution. Okay, so again, there's a lot of pilpul here. But the Iker, once again, one always has to be very, very careful in all of these inyanim, not to let the trees obscure the forest. Purim is about emuna in the hashgacha of Hashem. Purim is about seeing Hashem's presence, even in concealment, even when there's hiddenness, even when you don't have supernatural miracles. And therefore, Purim is the great, great reminder to us that even when we don't openly see the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he is here to help us, take care of us, love us, bring us to the right place that we have to be. And therefore, Purim gives us courage and hope in times of adversity, in times of difficulty, that Hashem does not abandon his people. That's why Purim is a Golus holiday, because Golus, and of course, even in Eretz Yisrael, we're still in Golus. We don't have the Mikdash yet. Golus is a time when that is not always that apparent. Or if we perceive it, we sometimes perceive it as a Midas Adin. And Purim is the holiday that gives us that great, great hope. So, B'ezras Hashem, I wish everybody to have a Purim Sameach, and may we be zeicha to the fulfillment of the Pasuk, La Yehudim Haisa Eira V'Simcha V'Sasen V'Kar. May we have light and joy and rejoicing and honor. And as we add in Havdalah, Kein Tiyalanu, may it be for us as it was for our forefathers and foremothers so many years ago. So Purim Sameach, and everybody should be well.